Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocate Radio Show. This is your lucky day. Extended Election Day coverage, Wisconsin Supreme Court race here in the great state of Wisconsin. We've been celebrating Alvin Bragg Day.
Woo-hoo!
Finally, an indictment of defendant Donald J. Trump. I like saying that. I'm going to say it lots. And perhaps the finest possible guest we could have at this moment in history, because where Supreme Court merges with Donald Trump recount, steps Maggie Dawn into the breach. Milwaukee County Corporate Council. See, I'm trying to sew it all together. I have an interesting mind.
I think you did. Hey, I think you Dawn. Did.
Maggie Dawn, how you been, sister? And I know we'll talk about the Donald Trump, but Supreme Court race in the state of Wisconsin, I got to tell you, I'm not on pins and needles, but I'm confidently optimistic about the outcome tonight.
If I'm being really honest with you, Mike, I have been like angry and on edge all day. Like, do not cut me off in the car. Do not mess with me. I don't want to see your Trump 2024 flags, like just not having any of the nonsense today. So I took myself up. You guys may recall I've been in Arizona. I'm still here. Don't worry. I early voted. But I took myself literally on an 8-mile hike up a canyon today because I was like, I need to be away from people because nice. I might snap with the tension.
What do you think the chances are that Dan Kelly loses tonight and seeks to throw out all the voters in Milwaukee County
and
Dan recount
County.
2023? What do you think the chances are?
Yeah, I think if we've got a small margin, and I'm going to call a small margin in this case, anything south of 40,000 votes, I think you see Kelly ask for a recount. Now, remember, state law, we the taxpayers pay for it if it's within a very razor-thin margin. I think that's half of a percentage point, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Yeah.
And you legally, I don't believe, can ask for a recount if the margin is more than, say, like 2.5, something around that percentage. But they are expecting really high turnout today. That's good for Janet, certainly. The weather may be a damper a bit today. But I do think, Mike, you got your finger right on it, that if Kelly's margin is quite small, and again, I'm going to put that at 40,000 or less, give or take what we might have in terms of turnout, we'll probably see him not concede. That would be right on brand for Dan Kelly.
Maggie Dawn, 75,000 votes would be approximately the margin of recount. That would be about half of a percent, but I'm assuming topping out at about 1.5 million voters statewide in this race. That would reflect the greatest numbers since the Kloppenburg-Prosser race back in 2011. Do you think we set a record? Do you think we go north of that? And B, the greatest number of votes any candidate has ever had, at least in my lifetime, at least in my memory, is Joe Kurofsky, 855,000 votes. I'd like to see Protasiewicz get to 1 million. What do you think?
Yeah, a couple of things. Boy, we thought the Prosser-Kloppenburg election was a bit of sort of Beauty and the Beast, if you will, if you're talking about sort of fitness to serve on the Supreme Court and willingness to follow the law. Remember this, we were talking about Prosser. This is the guy that choked out one of his fellow justices, allegedly, right? You know, and then had his own Supreme Court review his behavior in an ethical complaint. But again, digressing here on Tuesday, we viewed that election as having, you know, very significant implications, and there was massive turnout here. I think we should expect a larger turnout. There's much higher stakes. I think people on both sides of the aisle came to understand that perhaps in a different way than they did in 2011. And I do think you're going to see vote totals that are much closer and over a million potentially for both candidates here. I do think it's going to be a very high turnout election.
Megan Dawn, the Walker race, the recall, 2012, 1.335 million for the Wanker, 1.164 million for Tom Barrett. Obviously, Scott Walker, he woke up voters, low propensity voters that had not voted before. And I think Donald Trump held many of those, but then we saw a fall off. I mean, even Ron Johnson, when he went out publicly, talked about the fact if Donald Trump had gotten the 51,000 votes that voted down ticket for Assembly and Senate Republican candidates, right, he would have won the state of Wisconsin. Even Ron Johnson did that math. Well, as I do the math around the state, my understanding is we got 400,000 early votes. That's almost more votes than Michael Skronik got in totality. And we know there's a propensity for Democrats to early vote. So, Maggie Dawn, I'm not discouraging anyone. If you're heading to the polls, do so. The bad weather is held off here in Wisconsin. Still time to vote. Hell, you can go vote and still catch the Brewer game. And the greatest election night coverage ever right here on Civic Media. But my point being, we've never had this sort of focus on the race. I think all other prior indicators, when you throw $42 million and you throw the Dobbs decision in the mix,
right,
Maggie, I think voters are engaged off the hook relative to what they would normally be in the spring. And I think if you see Madison and Dane County get to 50%, it's all over but the crying for Dan Kelly.
I agree with that analysis, Mike. I do think it's spot on. And I think had Dan Kelly been a more humble candidate, frankly, just a more humble human, he would have actually put some distance between him and the religious right when it came to the Dobbs decision, because I think that that may be the difference maker in this election. I think that plus the closeness between Dan Kelly, his work, his employment by the Republican National Committee in seeking to overturn an election, I think there's voter fatigue when you get to swing voters. And also that contingency that you talked about, Mike, those folks that maybe in your regular spring Supreme Court election might stay home. I think those two things might get those folks to the polls in a big way. I think your money, Dane County, has been carrying Democrats, doing far greater than what I think used to be anticipated from Dane County in terms of seeing Democrats across the finish line to beat Republicans. I think turnout here in Dane County is absolutely essential. And if we see numbers over 50% of registered voters voting in Dane County, that is going to be curtains for Dan Kelly. And I think, you know, we've been talking about suburban white women, college-educated white women since Trump's upset in 2016. I think we've got to talk about that contingent of voters in this election, too, and what they might be saying in their churches and to their husbands might be very different, let's hope so, from the way that they vote in those private voting booths. Women care about access to health care. They do view health care as a right. And I think many of them themselves or women that they knew very well growing up had to make those decisions for their own health care and for themselves. And you know, for the first time, we've got generations of women that have grown up when abortion has been legal and accessible and accepted as such. So let's hope we see big turnout for Janet coming from Dane County and certainly those white suburban college educated women. Come on, you made a mistake in 2016. It's high time you fix that error, ladies. Get to the polls. If you're listening to this, go vote.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That is Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, friend of the Devil's Advocates. Maggie, great to see you. Thanks for joining us. Dan Kelly is not putting any distance between himself and the religious right. I mean, Protus Sayers had like a chest cold for the last several days, so she wasn't out, you know, pounding and doing the campaigning. She had surrogates. Dan Kelly, on the other hand, according to Daniel Bice of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, on the private plane of some anti-abortion advocates bouncing around the state in the very fancy jet with the millionaires who have a trust of like $40-some million. I mean, this, he's embracing the hard right. And he's not walking away from it at all. I don't think there's any question in this race. If Dan Kelly wins the Supreme Court, abortion will remain illegal in the state of Wisconsin. Maggie Dunn.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I'm not going to give any candidate a hard time for necessarily using a private plane. I will give Dan Kelly a hard time for using a private plane paid for by those people, right? He could have lined up a number of private planes because that's who supports Dan Kelly. And let's just like pause and observe the complete ridiculousness of the idea of multimillionaires being the people that want to tell women they can't choose anymore. Listen, if every woman that got an abortion, if you handed them a couple of million bucks, I'd say a few of them might opt to have the kid, right? That economic uncertainty and risk to children that they have and their family's overall well-being weighs heavy on women's hearts when they're trying to make those decisions. I say those people shouldn't pay for Dan Kelly flying around on a private jet. Put your money where your mouth is. Support healthcare for all. Support free education. Support free lunches at school. In other words, care for those lives after they leave the womb, folks, and maybe people could take you seriously. It ain't me, and it ain't today flying around on that jet by Dan Kelly. What a farce.
Maggie Dawn, last 60 seconds, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce relented, finally pulled an ad that a rape victim was saying was re-traumatizing her in their efforts to support Dan Kelly. Your thoughts?
I mean, I can't say it on live radio, Dom. Day late, dollar short on everyone who has been a victim of sexual assault. Shame on you and shame on Dan Kelly.
Folks, she is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to special extended live coverage, an election night special. Get out and vote. Keep it locked right here. We'll take you all the way until the glorious victory party for Janet Protus Sayers later. I'm projecting victory upon her, Maggie Dawn. And oh yeah, it's Alvin Bragg Day, the arraignment of Donald Trump. Perhaps we can broach that topic with Maggie Dawn as well.
Maybe.
Come back more. Super duper special extended coverage, election night, Devil's Advocates, and Maggie Dawn.
Welcome to this special live coverage of the spring general election here on your local civic media radio station.
News director Terry Bell and a team of political experts will be checking in with reporters from around the state. You'll get results from your local races, along with insight into what's happening with one of the most important in the country, an open seat on the state Supreme Court.
This special coverage is brought to you by Bug Tussle Wireless, keeping you connected to the world around you, and Chaz Design, Build, and Madison. Sustainable renovations since 1992. It all starts now, live on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Good evening. I am Kristen Bry. All right. And we're here with Jane Matinair.
Good evening, everybody.
And we welcome you here tonight across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network, but also via the Civic Media app. We invite you to listen to tonight's coverage anywhere you are on your smartphone by downloading the free Civic Media app in your app store.
And just a reminder as well, polls across Wisconsin open for just another 52 minutes until 8 p.m. And if it so happens that you're still waiting at 8 o'clock, don't leave. Make sure you stay in line so you can cast your vote.
There are a number of races and results we're watching tonight, including, of course, the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, where tonight the ideological balance of the court is up for grabs. While it is a nonpartisan race, liberal Milwaukee Circuit Court Judge Janet Protus Sayers is facing conservative former state court justice Dan Kelly for a 10-year term to fill the seat of retiring conservative justice Pat Rogensack. If former Justice Kelly wins, that will keep the conservatives' court 4-3 majority in place. But should Protasiewicz be victorious, that would tilt the court 4-3 in favor of liberals slash progressives. It is not an understatement to say tonight's results will not only shape Wisconsin, but the race could and likely will have national implications, and America is watching.
Here at Civic Media, we are also watching mayoral races around the state in Madison, Racine, and Green Bay, nonpartisan races in Madison. The incumbent Sotia Rhodes Conway, Gloria Reyes, the former Madison School Board president and former deputy mayor of Madison. In Racine, it's incumbent Mayor Corey Mason. His challenger is Henry Perez. And in Green Bay, it's Eric Gingrich, who is the incumbent, and Chad Weiniger, the Brown County administrator.
Then moving over to the 8th state Senate seat, this is the only partisan race on anyone's ballot, but is only in that district for the 8th district for the Senate. There is a special election in Southeast Wisconsin to fill the seat of former Republican state senator Alberta Darling, who resigned last year. The outcome of that race will determine whether Republicans maintain a 2/3 supermajority in the state Senate or if Democrats can hold off by one vote. The Republican candidate is Dan Knodel, who is currently a state rep in the legislature. And the Democrat is Jody Habish-Sinikin, who is an environmental attorney.
Another nonpartisan race that we're watching here in the Civic Media Network, the Outagamie County executive race between incumbent Tom Nelson and former Outagamie County board member Kevin Stern. And we're also watching the 3 statewide referendums that are on today's ballot as well.
Yes, you might have seen these on your ballot, whether you knew they were going to be there or not. But there are the first 2 questions that was on a statewide for everyone's ballot were 2 constitutional amendments that would expand the criteria for judges to use when deciding the terms for defendants who have been charged with a crime but not yet convicted. This referendum was broken into 2 questions. And both questions, as I said, have to do with broadening the criteria that the judges use when deciding whether or not they will stay in jail in between when they're waiting for trial. So one question, the first question was asking to let courts give judges the flexibility to consider what serious harm instead of serious bodily harm when setting non-monetary conditions for release. And the second could let judges consider other factors when setting bail besides ensuring defendants show up to court. So the people who wanted you to vote yes on this and the people who were backing this referenda argue that the change would strengthen public safety by fixing Wisconsin's bail system. And the opponents to this referenda who want you to vote no said that this would adversely impact people who can't afford bail, violate rights of those who are innocent until proven guilty, and increase cost for local jails in our already backlogged justice system.
And then the third question is a non-binding advisory referendum. So along with the 2 constitutional amendments about bail, voters will see an advisory referendum from Republican legislators on the ballot. Question number 3, shall able-bodied childless adults be required to look for work in order to receive taxpayer-funded welfare benefits? And if you're confused about the question being asked because you think it's about a matter that's already found in state law, you would be right, because it essentially is.
It essentially is, and yet it is a non-binding referendum, so even regardless of how the vote turns out, it actually doesn't change anything, unlike the first 2 questions, which actually would change our state constitution,
right,
should they pass tonight. We are excited to host this hour in primetime here with you. You usually hear us in the afternoon, midday, 11 to 2, but here we are in primetime. Later in the hour at 7:30, we will be joined by Patrick Marley, a longtime Wisconsin political journalist who spent years covering the Wisconsin Capitol for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and now is a national reporter focusing on voting issues in the upper Midwest for the Washington Post. We will talk to him about his coverage of the Wisconsin Supreme Court race and how it came to have so much national attention.
And then at the end of the hour, closer to 8 o'clock, we will connect you with your anchors for the rest of the evening. Civic Media News Director Terry Bell will join us, along with Todd Albaugh, the host of the Todd Albaugh Show. And then beginning at 8 p.m., they will anchor for the rest of the night from the Civic Media World headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, and talking to our news correspondents who are truly all across the state.
Yeah, truly. And in the next segment, when we return from our next break, we are going to be talking to Barry Burden, who is the director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. There has been a lot of debate and confusion over the three statewide ballot referendums we just told you about. And while two could change our state constitution and one is non-binding, we're going to talk to Barry about the strategy behind adding these referenda and what effects it may or may not have on voter turnout, despite the fact that that is sometimes arguably the reason that they're there in the first place, is to motivate people to vote usually for the spring election, a lower voter turnout. But I would have to say from early, I don't know what you've been able to see so far, Jane, but I would say from Twitter and other social media reports and things that I am hearing across the state as far as high voter turnout and potentially we may break some records tonight.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting evening. And of course, again, Terry Bell and Todd Alba and the rest of our civic media team will be keeping an eye on things as the results start coming in. It's interesting. I had a text from a very good friend of mine today, Kristen, who said essentially, I just voted. She wanted to make sure that I knew that. But she also said, I read those referenda three times and still don't understand what they meant.
What they meant.
And another friend chimed in on the thread and said, that's why I always read my ballots ahead of time. So if you had the opportunity to do that and you had a translator with you who could help explain them, because who was the guest that we had on not too long ago who explained that these are all written by lawyers?
It wasn't a guest. It was, well, guest, but also a listener, Joe McClear, who is a lawyer.
McClear,
and
right,
he said,
right.
And he's worked, and he had actually worked on this issue some. But I was surprised with people who are actually lawyers, who, whether it was in a comment section for one of my videos or just seeing it on Twitter, of, I don't know, even the most educated people I know read those, especially the first question, and felt, what did I just read? And you know, I think that maybe we'll talk to Barry about this as well. Because with referenda, it's interesting because I think there is something to be said as far as directly being able to vote and show popularity for policy, which sure. is something that we as voters cannot organize and do on our own. The only reason why we have these state constitution amendments on our ballot this time is because it's been passed in two separate sessions by the legislature. That is the only reason why we are able to, we're actually being able to vote directly on this now. But unlike other states where the people can actually organize and get enough signatures and put a binding referenda on their ballot for people to vote for, we have to go through a legislature being able to approve that. Now, typically we see non-binding referenda on the county level, and this is where we see it about marijuana, we see it about abortion, we see it about fair maps. And one question I have for Barry when he joins next is, it's not very clear which ones are binding and which ones are advisory when it's written on your ballot.
Yep,
and
right.
I think that probably goes also for school referenda, which there are binding school referenda for funding on some school districts for people throughout the state. And it is not very clear on which of these referenda have teeth and which ones do not.
Well, and it was interesting also in talking to my friend who said, my daughter lives in Milwaukee County. I live in Waukesha County. Why is this abortion question not on my ballot? And I know it's only in three counties, but who makes that decision? Who makes the decision on whether or not it makes it on that county's ballot?
Well, I think it's the organization within the county on people making sure that it gets on the ballot versus, and that it's just a county by county, because I think Milwaukee had the abortion referenda.
So did Dane.
And so did Dane. And so that is at the county level. And so I'm not exactly sure if it's a signature thing or how many people have to be on board. But we can maybe ask when Barry Burton comes on the show. Coming up next, but stick with us as we continue to give you tonight's coverage of the spring election in Wisconsin across the Civic Media Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome to this special live coverage of the spring general election here on your local Civic Media radio station.
News director Terry Bell and a team of political experts will be checking in with reporters from around the state. You'll get results from your local races, along with insight into what's happening with one of the most important in the country, an open seat on the state Supreme Court.
This special coverage is brought to you by Bug Tussle Wireless, keeping you connected to the world around you, and Chad's Design Build in Madison. Sustainable renovations since 1992. It all starts now, live on your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
Welcome back. I am Kristen Bry, and she is Jane Matinair, and we are live in primetime for the Wisconsin Spring Election Night 2023.
And we're really excited to welcome our next guest. Barry Burton is the director of the Elections Research Center at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Barry, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Hi, folks. Thanks for having me.
How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Saw lots of voters today around the UW-Madison campus. No long lines, if you've seen some of the video coming out of Eau Claire.
Yeah.
But lots of students eager to vote. So it's been terrific. And weather has sort of held off. It's just rainy here at the end of the day, but it's been tolerable.
Absolutely. I feel the same way down in southeast Wisconsin. We had a splash thunderstorm, it felt like, this afternoon, and then just some drizzle throughout the rest of the evening. But I read a quote from you in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently that was along the lines of, referendums are increasingly being used by both political parties, particularly in nonpartisan spring elections, which usually don't generate great voter turnout. And so separate from today and today's election, has that worked, that this is a growing trend that both sides are using as far as putting this referenda on, getting the word out, and having that be a motivating factor for voters?
It's definitely a growing trend to at least give it a try. I guess it's sort of costless for a party to put something on the ballot, especially at the county level. There are a lot of county referendums about redistricting and marijuana and same-sex marriage and welfare benefits and other things. And, you know, there's no harm. It's cheaper to do that than to spend money on campaign ads. So I suppose they figure it's worth trying. You know, in a normal spring election, it's possible that could have a little effect on juicing turnout on one side. This is not a normal spring election, obviously. So I think those ballot issues have gotten completely buried by the Supreme Court race and even some of the mayor's races and other things that are going on. But it's possible, you know, in something like the 2019 Supreme Court election, which Brian Hagedorn won by 6,000 votes, that was about half of a percentage point. In a year like that, it's possible that a ballot issue could matter. I don't think we're going to be in that territory tonight, just because the Supreme Court is just so dominating everything else today.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, Barry, on whether or not these referenda are really the driving force behind getting people out to the polls. And certainly from, as you mentioned, the lines in Eau Claire and even some comments I've seen on Twitter about the number of young women who are voting, I think it's certainly the Supreme Court race that has gotten them out.
You know, I do wonder if Jennifer Doro had won the primary instead of Dan Kelly, and the race was more about her performance in the Darrell Brooks trial in Waukesha, and cash bail became an issue because of that. We have some cash bail issues on the ballot. Could those be connected in a more direct way? And maybe they would have been more prevalent or more prominent for voters. But again, I think the Republican efforts to make that part of the discussion have really not worked very well, because abortion is just such a controlling issue this time around. That's going to be the thing that decides this race and has gotten people out. But, you know, bring it back in another year. There's no cost to doing this. So why not give it a try?
Well, there's no cost except when it is an amendment to the Constitution, correct? And so I think we've gotten so used to often, especially at the county level, seeing referenda in more liberal, left-leaning counties like Dane County or Milwaukee County or even Green Bay, and they have a marijuana referenda. They have a fair maps referenda. They have an abortion referenda. But, you know, and you go in there and some people know that it's non-binding. Some people have questions about it. But then you get to the two first questions statewide for everyone actually changes our state constitution and has ramifications. And so I guess part of my question is, how is there not more indication on the ballot of what is actually has ramifications and what is a popularity contest?
It's a terrific point. I think you all described this pretty well at the opening. Most voters don't know this is happening and can't differentiate very easily. Even lawyers have a tough time explaining which things are binding, what's going to be locked into the Constitution maybe forever. I think Wisconsin has only amended the state constitution 100 times, something like that, in 170 years. And we might do that tonight in two votes. There's really been very little public discussion about this. It's not something we get to deliberate about. It's yes or no. It happens or it doesn't happen. There's no middle ground. So it's not like the legislative process where, at least in theory, there's some give and take and amendments and a process that gets you to some kind of consensual outcome. So I think political scientists like me have real concerns about using the ballot to make real policy decisions like this when there hasn't been a good public discussion leading to it.
And I think, oh, go ahead, Jane.
I was just going to say, Barry, I suspect that these are written intentionally murkily.
Yeah, intentional Merkelism. Yeah, that's. Yeah, you know, in some states that do this a lot, places like California and Arizona will have a dozen, 15 very serious policy things on the, you know, insurance reform and tort policy. And sometimes those are intentionally designed so that a yes actually feels like a no and the other way around. And so it's easy and sometimes intentional for voters to be confused.
And I guess, because in on the one hand, I feel like we lament sometimes when we cannot, I'll get through this question fast because we only have 1 minute. Is it good for democracy as far as knowing that it can be confusing, knowing that there's not always a good public service awareness of what it is? Is it still good for us to be able to vote directly as voters versus only ever giving it up to the legislature?
Well, I've got some skepticism about it. I think it's helpful to keep politicians honest so they know where the public is, and there's always this threat that they might be overrun by us, but actually making policy this way, it has some real downsides.
All right. Well, we'll definitely have to have you back on our show during the afternoon because Barry Burton, I always love hearing from you, always love reading your quotes in and across all of the political reporting. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for having me.
All right. And election night coverage continues right here on the Civic Radio Network when we return.
We're like those of a third world country.
Good evening. I am Kristen Bry, joined by Jane Matinere. And no, this is not at an As Goes Wisconsin rerun. We are live in primetime for the Wisconsin spring election night 2023. Continuing coverage from across Wisconsin this entire evening and covering results on the key races affecting your future.
And please remember, the polls across Wisconsin are open for just another 26 minutes and 30 seconds until 8 o'clock tonight. And if you're standing in line at 8 p.m., make sure you stay there. You waited all that time, wait a little longer. It's a really important election. We want to make sure you get a chance to cast your vote.
Absolutely. And I know that we are waiting on a call from Patrick Marley, who is our guest for this next segment. We're very excited to talk to him. He has had his finger on the pulse of Wisconsin politics and elections for years. Patrick is a veteran Wisconsin political journalist who spent years covering the state capitol for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and is now a national reporter focusing on voting issues in the upper Midwest for the Washington Post. And we will hear from our producer once Patrick is able to join us. But Jane, you were saying today that there was some concern with talking about staying in line as far as a voting machine up in Green Bay?
Journal Sentinel reporting that the city of Green Bay had to borrow a voting machine from Brown County after the one at the Green Bay Botanical Garden malfunctioned. According to City Clerk Celestine Jeffries, the voting machine wasn't working, so they replaced it with another, which didn't work. That machine replaced by a third that did not work, so they had to borrow one from the county.
So there you go. So it's, you know, and I always feel for the city clerks who have to rush on the days where they need to be put out fires. And so it sounds like they did get that resolved. But as far as it's a great thing when we actually get those problems resolved, and also, but really expecting and hoping that people stay in line, even when there are issues at the ballot or at the polling place. I think we saw there was incredibly long lines at Eau Claire earlier today, which I think it's always a double-edged sword, because on the one side, you feel very excited that people have turned out, that people are engaged. But then when the flip side of that inevitably is that they weren't prepared for that many people, and so ballots run out, machines sometimes break. And so the inevitability that you may have to wait a little bit longer, and it's not always as easy for everyone, certainly does happen. But I would say, without seeing any actual totals or official numbers so far, anecdotally, things feel like turnout has been pretty impressive so far today.
Yeah, it really felt that way for me. And I vote just a couple of blocks away from my house, and I was number 246. And I don't ever remember, even if I voted later in the day, that it was over 200. So it just feels, again, looking at some of the Twitter feeds, looking at some of the videos from around the state, it just feels like there's a lot of engagement. There's a lot of people finally who are really interested and engaged.
And engaged, which is great. And I think we now have Patrick Marley on the phone.
You do.
Patrick, welcome to our special coverage for Election Night 2023. How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're great. We are live and excited for results to start coming in. But as a veteran reporter like yourself, who has been covering Wisconsin for as long as you have, what has surprised you, if anything, about this Wisconsin Supreme Court election?
I mean, I guess what's surprising is that you do have the very real potential of liberals taking control of the court that conservatives have had a pretty strong control of for 15 years. So all of my time covering the state Supreme Court really has had a swing court or a conservative court. And, you know, it'd be a sea change if Janet Protasiewicz were to win over Dan Kelly today.
And Patrick, the spending has been astronomical on this race. Are you able to look at anything to have any kind of analysis on as to what the impact of all that money has been?
Well, I mean, it's put the race on the radar of voters in a way that they don't normally see. I mean, this is the most expensive court race in the country's history. It's more than $40 million, probably close to $50 million by the time all is said and done. The previous record is $15 million in Illinois, but that was from 2004, so that's really more like $27 million. So we're doubling the record here. But still, it's important to remember that that is a small amount of money compared to a race for governor or a race for U.S. Senate, and certainly nothing compared to a presidential election. But what you do hear from people is that it can boost turnout, because so many people are aware of an election that they might not have previously been aware of. This is, spring elections are sort of the purview of people who are really into politics and pay close attention, and not the place for more casual voters.
And that's what I don't want to say that this much spending, let alone this much outside spending, is ever a good thing. But also, if we end up breaking records tonight for turnout, I do think high turnout and more engaged voters is a good thing. And so do you think there's other inputs that we can point to the organization of both parties, even though this is a nonpartisan race, both parties have been very active along with the C3 and C4 groups outside of the official parties themselves that are also potentially should deserve credit for the turnout that we potentially could end up seeing tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Wickler from the State Democratic Party has said that ordinarily the party has the state has an election in November, and then much of the staff that they hire drop off and go away, their contracts end. And in Wisconsin, the Democrats anyway kept on a big portion of their staff so that they could go right into this election. I think they said they knocked 70,000 doors before the February primary, which is a very large number compared to anything they'd done in the past. Republicans, I don't think, were quite as active, but they were aware of the stakes of this race. And so, you know, all that activity does, you know, knocking on doors a bunch does lead to more people voting. So there's definitely correlation there.
We're talking to national reporter who focuses on voting issues in the upper Midwest for the Washington Post, Patrick Marley. And I had just gotten back to Wisconsin right on the cusp of the last Supreme Court election when Dan Kelly had run for re-election and he was beat pretty handedly by Jill Karofsky. And he's obviously now running again. And so was there anything that changed about him or his campaign to make him a stronger candidate this time around compared to 3 years ago?
I think it's hard to compare these two elections. You know, 2020 was the dawn of the pandemic. So Wisconsin mm-hmm. was the first state in the country to hold an election under the conditions of the pandemic. And, you know, so much was unknown then. People, you know, there was no vaccine and we didn't know how long it would be to get a vaccine. We didn't, you know, people were washing their groceries sometimes and they were concerned that it could be spread from touch. And so, you know, Milwaukee and Green Bay closed huge numbers of polling places. You saw these crazy lines. You had absentee voting like you'd never seen before. And so the clerks were just absolutely crushed by the number of requests they were getting and had no means of dealing with that number of elections or number of ballots. Plus you had the presidential primary, which was low key, but still, you know, generates much higher turnout than a Supreme Court race. And so that's always a different factor. So, you know, Kelly ended up losing by 10 points in 2020. That's not great for him heading into 2023, but there's a lot that's different. You know, I don't know that if Persich wins, she's going to be able to win by that big of a margin.
Patrick, we had longtime Republican strategist Bill McCaution on our show last Friday, and he said he has never seen the conservative base fired up like this. And I'm curious if you agree with this, or does he have to say that? Is it spin doctoring?
Well, I mean, Bill knows the Republican base very well. He's been working with them closely going back to the Tommy Thompson days. That said, I think it's hard to say that this is the most fired up that the Republican base has ever been for a Supreme Court race. Just think back to 2011 when David Prosser was up for his normal election right after Scott Walker introduced Act 10, and we had these massive protests, and we had the beginnings of recall efforts and court challenges where you didn't know what the future of Act 10. Act 10, of course, is the limits on public sector unions that Walker put into place right after he was elected. That election was, you know, this incredibly close, incredibly fired up proxy war over Act 10. You saw a turnout of close to 40%, which is huge for a Supreme Court race. Both sides really fired up. Prosser won by 6,000 or 7,000 votes, which is, you know, tiny portion of a 1 percentage point. So that's like sort of a high watermark for everybody in Supreme Court races. To say that the Republican base is that fired up this election would be crazy, I think.
Well, and that was my gut reaction too, because it feels there is a continued energy on the left due to abortion still having a criminal ban in Wisconsin. And the only kind of indicator that Bill had said of why conservatives were really fired up is for the legitimacy of the court, which I just feel like on a very gut level doesn't carry the same weight with people unless you're kind of a politico who follows these kinds of things, that the court is really what fires you up on being a constitutional conservative. And so I kind of, it feels like you said, as far as the Act 10 being a better indicator as far as what really fired up looks like. But if Janet Protasiewicz wins tonight, you know, Politico had a headline, I think either yesterday or this morning, that it could be the beginning of the end of the GOP dominance in Wisconsin. Do you agree with that?
I think that goes a little far. I didn't see that Politico story, but I mean, this is a purple state. It's a swing state. Joe Biden won it by 20-some thousand votes. 4 years earlier, Donald Trump won it by a similar number. You know, George W. Bush won it in 2000, 2004 by small margins. It's a purple state, and it's going to be a purple state in 2024. Comparing a state Supreme Court race to a partisan race that happens in the fall is not a good idea. You have half the turnout or a quarter of the turnout or a third of the turnout. It's just a completely different dynamic in a presidential race, in a Senate race, in a governor's race. So there could be lessons learned from tonight's results, but people should not get carried away as into how they interpret that information.
Well, and so that leads to the next question, too. So do they change the strategy going forward, or just if Dan Kelly loses, or do they just keep doing and messaging the same?
Hard to say what they'll do. I mean, there's one big difference in terms of strategy this time around, just from a pure nuts and bolts aspect of the campaigns, and that is that Protasiewicz teamed up directly with the state Democratic Party and was able to not only raise a ton of money, but spend that money very efficiently, because the party would raise the money and give it to her, and she would buy ads at much lower rates because the candidates get the lowest rates. And the conservatives spent most of their money from third-party groups, either WMC, the state's business lobby, or a group run by Richard Uihlein, a mega donor for the Republicans. And they're paying much, much more for ads. So Protasiewicz, one, had a money advantage, but more than that, she had a number of ads advantage. So in the final weeks of the campaign, she ran three times as many ads as Dan Kelly, or her side ran three times as many ads as the Kelly side. And so you have this saturation effect that was very good for the liberal side. And conservatives are going to have to figure that out. Official from the state Republican Party has said, you know, this is, regardless of what the results are, they've got to figure this out because they can't let themselves getting, you know, having three ads for the other side run for every one ad of theirs.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Patrick Marley, national reporter for The Washington Post, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. We look forward to whatever you get to write about tomorrow about how the results go tonight. But thank you so much for joining us. Good evening. I am Kristen Bry, joined by Jane Matinere, and this is a special edition of As Goes Wisconsin, not a rerun. We are live in primetime for the Wisconsin Spring Election Night 2023. Continuing coverage from across Wisconsin this entire evening, bringing you results on key races affecting your future.
And the polls across Wisconsin are open for just another 9 minutes, about 9 minutes, until 8 p.m. So if you are in line at 8 p.m., stay there. They can't force you out. You get to cast your ballot. So be patient and exercise your right to vote.
Absolutely. So as Jane and I wrap up our time here, we welcome your anchors for the rest of the evening, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell, Todd Alba, of the host of the Todd Alba Show, and also Maurice Shepard, who is a professor of political science at Madison College. How are you, men, this evening?
Well, we're anticipating a very busy night. So, yeah, we're excited about that. I'm excited just to be like, you know, on.
I'm not sure your mic is on, Todd.
That
would be helpful.
I have no control. There we go. I'm usually on the other mic. I have a different position. I was going to say the most exciting thing for me, because you remember Chris Berman on ESPN. You know, it's like the NFL. It's As Goes Wisconsin prime time. You know, with Chris and Jane. That's the best part of the whole evening, having a prime time version of As Goes Wisconsin.
You know, one thing that strikes me is with so much attention has been paid, and rightfully so, to the Supreme Court race. There are so many other really interesting things on the ballot around Wisconsin tonight that people really haven't been talking about for the past few weeks, and I don't blame anybody or anything like that. But a lot of intrigue is happening around Wisconsin tonight that we want to talk to people about. One of them is the special election in Southeast Wisconsin, the 8th District, Alberta Darling's old seat. If Dan Knodel, the Republican in that race, wins, Republicans will have a supermajority in the state Senate. And there has been talk of what one thing a supermajority can do in the Senate is bring impeachment proceedings against different office holders and public officials. And there has been talk of that. I don't know how much of an appetite there is to go after some of the highest ranking Democrats in Wisconsin. There's been idle talk of impeachment proceedings against Governor Evers or Attorney General Josh Call. I'm not so sure about that there's an appetite to impeach Tony Evers right after he won an election. But I have a feeling, and this is just based on just my own gut, is that there may be some impeachments against, say, some circuit judges around Wisconsin, maybe even Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. I know that a lot of Republican lawmakers have kind of had their sights set on him for a long time. He's been a subject of a lot of their criticism. So maybe if the Republicans win the supermajority in the Senate, that could be something they do. What also is interesting, in Green Bay, a lot of outside money is being poured into that race, which really has a lot to do with the next presidential election. Green Bay, if you'll remember, has been kind of a hot spot of controversy in regards to outside money that's spent on get out the vote and voting awareness sort of efforts. And there are plenty of people, I guess, who would like to see a change in the Green Bay mayor's office because of all that. Those are just a couple that come to mind. And it's just going to be a fascinating night.
Absolutely. And so I know, as I think Scott Bauer from AP News posted an article earlier today kind of outlining how AP calls races. And so as far as both of you, all three of you, sorry, watching results roll in, what counties are you looking for? What turnout are you looking for? What are the numbers or percentages that kind of are indicators that give people an idea of where this is headed?
I'll let Todd and Maurice take that one.
I'll step in real quick. I think that this is Maurice, by the way. I think the usual suspects, the WOW counties first and foremost, and then also, again, Madison and Milwaukee, particularly in terms of Madison, again, having the high turnout that we had in Madison during the primary. Again, I expect sort of the same thing right now, but those would be sort of the two areas that I would first look at, the WOW counties and Madison and Milwaukee, to see what the turnout would be there.
And do we think that the results will be known tonight? Anybody have a guess on that?
Oh, I believe so. I think there's a high number of early voters and individuals that voted absentee ballot and that sort. So I know they can't start counting those until this evening. But I think we'll know pretty soon this evening, again, the outcome.
So as far as the structure that you have planned for the tonight, how many different correspondents are we talking to? How many different races are we following? I know that we have done this once for the midterms. We did it once for the primary. But now that we're obviously old hat at this, what can people expect for the rest of the evening?
We have eight reporters stationed around Wisconsin, in addition to Todd and I here in the studio, and Maurice providing analysis. So there is each reporter is going to be talking about different areas of offices as opposed to geographically. For instance, we're keeping a close eye on the Village of Mount Pleasant, which is a very interesting race tonight because the village board and village president are on the ballot in Mount Pleasant tonight. Basically, if you want to oversimplify it, those races are pretty much a referendum on Foxconn. All of the challengers in these races in Mount Pleasant tonight are Foxconn opponents, or at least opponents of the way Foxconn has been conducting itself in the Racine area. So that's going to be very interesting, how the people of Mount Pleasant, they're basically going to say how they think this has all been going.
That is, something happened just yesterday, right, as far as like a lawsuit filed?
That could very well be it. If that happened, it escaped my notice. But I just know that it is definitely always contentious. You never can tell. There's always a development in that story.
Absolutely. Well, we will be tuning in. We are excited to hear all of the coverage from across the state and hearing the analysis and commentary that the three of you have. Again, you're in good hands with Civic Media News Director Terry Bell, Todd Alba, host of The Todd Alba Show, and Maurice Shepherd, political science professor at Madison College. Anything else to round out the hour that you want people to stay tuned for?
Well, it's incredibly important. There is no, and people always say that before elections, but so much is being decided today that I think it behooves people to stay on top of what's happening.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we will sign off and hand things over to these gentlemen. You are in good hands. You have been listening to Kristen Bry and Jane Matinair of As Goes Wisconsin. We are waiting with bated breath for the rest of the night as election results roll in. And stay tuned.
At Chance Design Build, we believe that people should be judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. We believe that all humans have a right to privacy and a right to control their own bodies without government coercion. We believe that quality childcare, healthcare, and education should be publicly funded. Our society benefits the most when all people have the opportunity to thrive. At Chance Design Build, we are allied with organizations that promote these values. Building a better world, one remodeled home at a time. Learn more at ChanceDesignBuild.com.
Do you love getting rewards when you shop? Then shop Knucklehead CBD and Vapes with the Knuckleheads Club. Every $10 spent gets you closer to 25% off. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads. Stop in Saturday and Sunday and get 15% off Wellness and Wellness Plus, including Delta 8, THCP, CBD, and more, while getting points towards your next purchase. Knucklehead CBD and Vapes, your one-stop smoke shop, located at 520 State Street in Madison. No matter what you buy, make sure you buy Knuckleheads.